Blog Talk Radio.
You are now tuned into Kings of Non Sequitur. Any topic, any subject, anything goes. With your host, Jay and Trey. Ah, yes, welcome in, everybody. It is a special night indeed. You are listening to Kings of Non Sequitur, the off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast, here with you live on a Saturday night, July the 24th, 2021. I'm Dre, he's Jay. We've got our best wear on, our tuxedos. We are ready to give you the awards show. It is that special, special time of year where we give our attention to baseball and football players and incidents and people that may necessarily not get the attention that they usually get, maybe the attention that they deserve. You got baseball's Hall of Fame and football's Hall of Fame making their inductions, but we have our own version. We have our Hall of Fame / Hall of Infamy, and we like to give attention and a little shout out to the people who baseball and football may not really want to remember necessarily, but we remember. We've got long memories. We've got a lot of fun shows in the past in our archives, and hopefully this will be another fun one tonight. Jay, you ready?
I am ready. This is your show tonight, so fortunately I had zero show prep to do, because we're actually, the reason we're doing the show tonight is because we're leaving for vacation tomorrow. So I basically got home from work tonight, and I've been packing for the last hour now. And it's like, oh, it's time for the show. Better go jump on the show. So I'm going to sit here and enjoy and react.
Yes. Hopefully it will be some good reactions. Hopefully you'll be entertained. Hopefully all of you listening will be entertained. This is indeed my year for baseball. Jay will be back in a couple of weeks to give you the football inductions for our Hall of Infamy. But tonight, all about the hardball. I wanted to just let everyone know about the ways to contact us because I'll forget. I usually don't do it during our off-season shows. It just slips my mind. So upon hearing this show, if you have any questions or comments, you can always email us. The email address is inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. As always, when I do my inductions, I have it written up on our blog, and that goes live right when we go on the air. So the induction is up right now. If you go to inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com, my 5 entrants for this year's Baseball Hall of Infamy, they're already listed. Steps have been done. The link has been made to videos and articles and Wikipedia links and all the things that you need to know about these the inductees this year. And there's some, I'm sure there's a whole mess of stories that I don't know about that I wasn't able to research and find, but I've got a lot. I've got a lot of stories and a lot of things to talk about with these guys already. So hopefully it'll be something to remember and hopefully everyone enjoys it. Time for me to get busy and guess I'll just get right to it. You know, life turning back to normal here in the year 1AC after COVID, and baseball, of course, having its normal Hall of Fame ceremony in front of people and everything like that. That's coming up, I believe, next weekend. But we at IMLD, we didn't miss a beat last year. We had our Hall of Infamy. This year we have our Hall of Infamy. There's no shortages still of people and events that are infamous and deserve their own spotlight. So without further ado, here are my Hardball Hall of Infamy inductees for 2021. The one theme that I had this year doesn't run through all of them. It's the bookend. I just decided that the first entry and the last entry, there's a little bit of a connection there. they're similar people, and they both have a Chicago connection. Both of us, Jay and myself, being from Chicago, all of our Hall of Infamies usually are kind of Chicago slanted. We got so many memories from growing up watching sports in Chicago. So hopefully it's not too Chicago oriented for you people, but if it is, too bad. It's our show and we can do what we want.
Hey, we have to put up with all the East Coast bias, right?
Is Giannis a superstar yet? I know we were going to get to that.
After show. We'll save that for the after show.
I was just wondering, just a question.
Jury's still out, though.
We'll have to,
I'm sure you'll break down the historic nature of that stat line, because you were already doing that before we put the 50 burger up.
Oh, my gosh. All-timer.
On a bad knee.
So that's the only theme is before and after 1 and 5 Chicago connection to guys who are absolutely infamous and deserve the attention that they are going to get from me tonight. And with that, we'll get started with our first inductee. When I say the name, you will absolutely go, oh boy, you talk about infamous. There are not too many men more infamous in the history of baseball than Albert Bell.
Albert Bell's like the gift that just kept on giving, though. That's a lifetime achievement award, I believe.
No kidding. Yeah, this is going to be a long one. So let me get my breath and get ready to go here. Albert Bell, old Joey, was an outfielder mostly for the Cleveland Indians. He is infamous for a host of incidents that completely obscured his immense hitting talent. Bell is, in a way, the prime example of why so many of us sports fans don't regard the MVP or Hall of Fame opinions of sports writers very highly. Sure, his career was too short to be Hall of Fame worthy due to a degenerative hip that cut his career at 11 years. But in 1995, Bell had an all-time slugging season, becoming the only man to go 50-50 in home runs and doubles for the eventual American League champion Cleveland Indians. A shoe-in for league MVP, right?
Can you still say that?
I just did. Not so fast. Drink. Not the MVP. Take a drink. That's right. The writers voted Mo Vaughn of the Red Sox as the MVP in 05. Despite Bell having more of every major offensive category than Vaughn except steals, they did tie in RBI. It was widely thought that Vaughn got the vote due to the surliness of Bell with the media and not because they actually thought he was better than Bell. So what had old Joey done to make people despise him so? Well, let's see. There was a run-in with a heckler at LSU before he even made it to the majors. There was getting sent to rehab by the Tribe in 1990 for boozing. There was the high comedy of recruiting teammate Jason Grimsley to crawl through the catacombs of Comiskey Park to steal the corked bat that the umpires had confiscated and trying to switch it with a regular bat. There was cussing out Hannah Storm when she tried to interview him in the dugout during the 95 World Series. There were numerous tales of his temper tantrums. There was the time poor little Fernando Vina tried to tag him and Bell almost murdered him with a forearm shiver. The list is endless. Bell found time to try to run down kids who egged his house on Halloween in 95 as well. In retirement, he was convicted of stalking a former girlfriend, and in 2018, he caught a DUI / indecent exposure arrest, though the charges were dropped.
Wait, what year was that with the stalking the former girlfriend? Because that sounds like a USA movie.
I think this came after the psychiatrist being stalked by a former patient on USA. Maybe he was inspired by that.
Maybe his girlfriend was Shannon Tweed.
Maybe. I didn't do enough research, I suppose. I was thrilled when Bell came to my White Sox in 1997 to serve as Frank Thomas's protection in the order.
It says
so much about how hated Bell was that he is not remembered well for his 2 years in Chicago, even though in that time he had a 27-game hitting streak in 97 and a monster season in 98, setting franchise records with 49 home runs and 152 RBI. The man was impossible to root for, even on my favorite team. He wasn't just surly. He was angry in a sociopathic manner. And the fact that he put together a 933 career OPS and over 40 WAR will not be what comes to mind when his name is mentioned. Albert Bell will always be synonymous with batshit crazy, and his Fury run is the definition of infamous.
Yeah, that's an interesting entry, because we're talking about a guy who's clearly got nothing next level off-field problems, right? He even had some on-field problems, but he had a Hall of Fame career. But he'll never sniff Cooperstown. He won't sniff
never.
It. You know, yeah, the metrics crowd, the sabermetrics crowd, you have a 933 career OPS, and he didn't have a 3 or 4 year career. He had a sustained career. And produced everywhere he went. Now, he was a brutal fielder. I remember some of those escapades with him out in left field up for the White Sox. Those couple of years that he was there, he was
not very good.
A butcher. I believe butcher would be the proper term for somebody as bad in the field as he was. He had some interesting days out there patrolling the left field at the whatever it's called now, but Comiskey Park, we'll call it. For posterity's sake. But, yeah, no, that's one of those
high. You can do that when you average an RBI per game.
Yeah, when you have that level of performance, but you don't – nobody – you know, he's been Ben Wad, but without the murder by baseball, right? Nobody talks about Albert Bell in a positive light, no matter the fact that, like you said, he was robbed of an MVP on a pennant-winning team.
That's one of the worst decisions ever. There's no chance Mo Ball is more valuable than Albert Bell.
And we'll never sniff the Hall of Fame, because a lot of the people who vote for MVP probably vote for that as well. And this is your baseball writers of America, right? So, you know, they're the gatekeepers. You know, they're the ones wagging the finger at people. You know, you better talk to us. We're the ones that hold your future, you know, the way you're remembered in our hands. And yeah, they wield that a little bit too much, because the on-field, the actual production was Hall of Fame worthy. But we probably get the most productive member of the Hall of Infamy so far in baseball, at least, out of this.
He was awesome for those 11 years. He was absolutely a destroyer. He homered in his last ever at bat. He was just productive all the way to the end. But he was impossible to cheer for. I'm telling you, that's about the strangest set of games that I have been to in all of the Sox games that I went to, probably went to over 100 White Sox games, and the years that he was there, because he was so hated with the Cleveland Indian Guardians that you had that built-up hatred for the guy. He's a division rival for all those years, and then all of a sudden, nope, he's a White Sox, so now we got to cheer for him. You couldn't even really cheer for him because he was so hated. And the reaction from the crowd every time he came to the plate, it was almost like they were kind of waiting for him to fail so they could boo him, because they didn't want him to do well, because he's Albert Bell.
He's Parkman from Major League Two. Major League Two. He was like the jackass guy. He's the guy who starts off on the in Guardians but he's a jerk, but the fans all love him because he's their jerk. And then he gets traded to the White Sox. Funny that we have those two teams in play. And then they have to face him in the LCS, and then everybody hates him now. And it's very Albert Bell like.
Very Dennis Rodman like. Now, he could never be in any kind of Hall of Infamy, only because he's actually a Hall of Fame rebounder. But
going from the Bad Boys, right?
Right.
Any of those Detroit guys. But you know what? The Bull fans, they embraced him.
Right, because he was winning titles for them. Of course they embraced him. When he first got there, it was like, really? We're doing this? I don't know.
If the premise is they signed Albert Bell to protect Frank Thomas in the lineup, that worked.
Check and check. Absolutely.
So
cannot argue that.
Yeah. That wasn't Kenny back then, was it? Who was running the team back then?
I don't know, but you better stay out of White Sox business talking about Kenny. Better watch that.
Well, you know, just saying. I'm actually saying they made a good
that was move. Definitely before. I think I'm pretty sure it was before Kenny. That might be Shu. That might be Shuler who did that.
Shuler.
That's way in the way back machine.
Yeah,
he was the highest highest paid player in baseball when that deal was made. And that's another thing that shows how productive he was, that he made Jerry Reinsdorf come up off of $55 million. And that's not easy to do. And he did it for that guy, for that big of an asshole. But, and he was worth the money because he was good. He was very, very good. But completely infamous for his temper and all the things that he did. Yeah. So,
but when you see the lists, when you see those top 10 lists, or you see any of the lists on MLB Network or ESPN, if they put up that list of your top 10 right-handed hitters, he's a top 10 right-handed hitter of our lifetime, isn't he?
Yeah, him and Manny were on the same team, and they both are all-time great power hitters. And Manny might not sniff the hall either because of all the steroid convictions and whatnot.
Right.
So that's another interesting discussion to have. On to the second inductee this year in the Baseball Hall of Infamy. And sometimes we both pull out names that you don't know who the guy is at all when you say the name, and then you have to listen to the story. And then you find out, I kind of remember who that is. Yeah.
The P courier.
Exactly. Like, who? Oh, that guy. So this year is my turn to bring out a name that you're not going to know who the hell it is when I say the name, but you will understand once I go through his backstory. Ladies and gentlemen, the second inductee in this year's Hall of Infamy, Yuri Sukart. Yuri Sukart is very simply A-Rod's fake Dominican cousin.
A fake Dominican cousin, yeah.
The career of Alex Rodriguez is forever tainted by his failed steroid test and year-long suspension for HGH and testosterone. The failed steroid test was never supposed to be public knowledge. In 2003, MLB took anonymous tests of every ballplayer in order to see if there was enough of a league-wide roids problem to mandate regular testing, because looking at Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa wasn't evidence enough. The test results were secret until the list was seized by the feds as part of the Balco sting. A-Rod had told anyone who had asked, most notably Katie Couric in an interview, that he never used performance-enhancing drugs. But in early 2009, when the 104 names of the guys who tested positive became public, Rodriguez had to find a way to pivot and spin this situation. So he explained that, yes, he did feel pressure to perform up to his contract, and he did use some stuff back in 03. He also found time to bus-toss his cousin, Yuri Sukart. In a wild press conference, Rodriguez claimed that a cousin bought a drug over the counter in the Dominican called Bali, and despite not knowing exactly what the stuff was, he injected it twice a month for 6 months. Everyone at the same time called bullshit on the idea that a top-notch athlete making millions upon millions of dollars would blindly inject some unknown drug from his Dominican cousin. The scapegoating worked to an extent, though, as Sukart was banned from baseball clubhouses and was treated by the media like a dangerous steroid-peddling bad guy. There's a fascinating story from 2014 on Deadspin back when the site did good work. It describes the nature of Sukart's relationship with A-Rod. Let's just say that Sukart was a perfect fall guy. He had legal issues, he had financial issues, and he had a lifestyle, thanks to A-Rod, that he could not possibly have maintained if he had sang about his famous cousin. So he never sang, and eventually A-Rod would get caught cheating again and couldn't find anyone to blame but himself. So the fake in the description of Yuri Sukart is not referring to the kinship. He really is related to Rodriguez's New York people. The fake is everything else. A-Rod's loyalty to him was fake. His tale of taking shit that Yuri delivered from the DR was obviously fake. And the whole A-Rod aura was revealed to be a sham. He was the highest paid, the most popular, the best damn player in the world. But Alex Rodriguez is a punchline to this day. And his downfall began when he became a rat who squealed on his cousin, Yuri Sukart. Did I lose you, Jay?
No, I'm here. I thought you were still going, so that was my fault. No, that's one of those. Yeah, that's one of those deep cuts.
Yeah,
but that
I was talking about the fake Dominican cousin.
The fake Dominican cousin, because that was your. Yeah, you named that one of your.
Oh, I had
fantasy
a fantasy team named that. Right.
So that's how I remembered. Sure, as soon as that was pretty easy for me to remember part of that when you started talking about the fake Dominican cousin.
No.
So that's pretty, yeah, I got Grant standing here next to me.
Oh man, the next inductee, he can't listen to this.
No. He's not listening right now. He was just talking to me for something. So, yeah, sorry. I was a little distracted there for a moment. But, yeah, that's that whole story. You know, you take the failed drug test that people weren't supposed to know about, but then you just – then you double down. Then you crap all over the story, and you start lying, and you start making things – oh, that – and then that's why A-Rod, I think, is – you know, all these guys who got busted. So let's go jump in the Wayback Machine here. How many of these guys who got busted just would have said, yeah, I did it.
Yeah, I
did it. You got me. That was the culture. You know, how much more fondly would these guys be remembered if they just said, hey, everybody was doing it. That was the culture in baseball. We were paid to perform. Nobody was stopping it, right? There was no regulation on it. So yeah, we did it. Most of those guys would probably be in the Hall of Fame if there was a little contrition or admittance, but no, they all lied.
All of them.
They wagged their fingers. Well, no, who's the choir boy? Jose Canseco. Right?
I was actually going to refer to the only guy that tried to just say, well, I did it, and tried to just explain why instead of going through, did not have sexual relations with that woman, basically.
The finger wag.
Yeah. The only guy that actually tried to sort of fess up to it was your favorite Andy Pettit. Everybody else, I got the figure. I did not use steroids ever. Yeah, we went through that when we had our induction of that entire congressional meeting. But yeah, A-Rod was right at the top of the list of guys who just could not admit what happened. He had to be squirrely. He had to come up with excuses. He had to bust off his cousin. And everyone knew it was BS right from the beginning. And then when he fails again later on, when he fails more tests, it's like, okay, well, that just justifies our hatred and our disbelieving everything that you were saying before, because we knew you were full of it. And then after all of that, you're going to go back and take some more stuff and get busted again and get suspended for a whole year. That's just – so, yeah, he was a total fake, total fraud.
Oh, but, yeah, but then to create the fake family member – oh. Man, but you know what? A plus for originality.
Yeah, no one saw that coming. That's for sure. So our next inductee, like I said, your son can't listen to this because this is definitely not for.
No, don't worry. You're not on like an open speaker or anything here.
Thank goodness. Like he can't listen to this show until he's like 18 because it's just because of this particular segment. This next inductee goes into the Lee Elia wing of famous quotes and interviews. And
yes.
I'm not sure if you've ever heard this before, because I don't know if we've ever talked about it. But there was a certain, I don't know what you even call it, this absolutely bonkers, insane radio segment featuring a Hall of Fame manager sounding very unlike a typical Hall of Fame manager. I give you the most un-PC 2 minutes and 30 seconds you could possibly ever imagine.
Is it Earl Weaver?
Earl Weaver's Manager's Corner.
I've heard it.
And now to the Manager's Corner with Earl Weaver.
Hi, everybody. This is Earl Weaver with Manager's Corner. Today, I have Tom Moore, Oreo broadcaster, back on the show. And I understand Tom's been getting some mail with questions that supposedly I can answer. Now, what the fuck are some of these goddamn questions, Tom?
Well, first of all, Earl, George Moore from Baltimore is asking how much we feel the loss of Don Stanhouse.
Well, Don Stanhouse was an asshole. He had us in trouble, had the fucking bases loaded. God damn it, almost every fucking time he went out there, he liked to ruin my health smoking cigarettes, and thank God we got Timmy Stoddard coming in out of the bullpen right now, sticking a bat up their asses. And that's what it takes.
Well, Bill Whitehouse, Earl, that certainly is an answer. From Frederick, Maryland, wants to know why you and the Orioles don't go out and get some more team speed.
Team speed, for Christ's sake. You get fucking goddamn little fleas on the fucking bases, getting picked off, trying to steal, getting thrown out, taking runs away from you. You get them big cocksuckers that can hit the fucking ball out of the ballpark and you can't make any goddamn mistake.
Well, certainly this show is going to go down in history, Earl. Terry Elliott of Washington, D.C., wants to know why you don't use Terry Crowley as a designated hitter all the time.
Well, Terry Crowley's lucky he's in fucking baseball, for Christ's sake. He was released by the Cincinnati Reds. He was released by the fucking goddamn Atlanta Braves. We saw that Terry Crowley could sit on his fucking ass for 8 innings and enjoy watching a baseball game just like any other fan, and has the ability to get up there and break one open in the fucking ninth. So if this cocksucker would mind his own business and let me manage the fucking team, we'd be a lot better off.
Well, certainly you've made your opinions known on the fans' questions about baseball, Earl, but let's get to something else. Alice Sweet from Norfolk wants to know the best time to put in a tomato plant.
Alice Sweet ought to be worried about where the fuck her next lay's coming from rather than where her next goddamn tomato plant's coming from. If she'd get her ass out to fucking bars at night and go hustling around the goddamn street, she might get a prick stuck in her once in a while. I don't understand where these questions are coming from, Tom. That's about it from Manager's Corner. Go fuck yourself and the fuck with your show coming up next on the Baltimore Oriole Baseball fucking network.
I don't even have anything to add. I don't know what I'm. I don't have any context. I don't know possessed him to record that. But
that's what I mean. So you listen to that and you go, okay, how was that real? Right. That's the first thing you. And then the second is,
it couldn't have. It could not possibly.
That had to be like a mock segment or something where they're just playing around.
It had
to be. You know what? That's probably the most honest 2.5 minutes that you'll ever get out of a manager, right? Because that's usually when you get the honest. That's what we all wait around for is the honesty.
That's probably exactly how he sounded on a daily basis.
Yes. I'm going to guess that was what the locker room talks probably all sounded like. But I have heard that one before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, cause that's one of the great ones. That's one of the greats. But that definitely belongs there. But you'll have to put headphones on to listen to that one.
Yeah, no
that
doubt.
That one's not playing over the. Well, neither is the Lee Elia one. Those aren't playing over
no.
the loudspeaker. But I think what's almost as funny as the actual interview part was the guy asking the questions. Well, this is definitely gonna go. I don't know what the history of that. Of that recording is, but if that aired, oh my God.
I have no context. I have no idea. All I know is two guys obviously having the time of their lives, and it's just a joy to listen to. Both of them are cracking up during the whole thing. You can hear the smile on both of their faces while they're recording it. So they loved it. It's lived on for years and years. That's a Hall of Fame manager who's no longer with us doing a segment like that. If they ever caught Lou Piniella, Sparky Anderson, to do a segment, something like that, that would be so awesome. It would have been so great. But Tommy Lasorda or something like that. But they got Earl Weaver to do it, and it's great, and we're the richer for it because that's and you can't have any of the managers today do that. Can you imagine Craig Counsell trying to do something like that? It just would not ever go over. Not a chance. For David Ross, old Grandpa Rossi, nah. So moving on to our fourth D, we're going to get a little lighthearted. I'm so heavy. I always have these dark avenues and corners that I like going down. So I'm gonna lighten it up a little bit for our fourth inductees. I'm going to get a little inspirational. I would like to induct a tag team entry for our fourth inductee in the 2021 Baseball Hall of Infamy, the team of Jim Abbott and Curtis Pride. These inspirational big leaguers are infamous for making it to the major leagues despite some major handicaps. Maybe I was watching the HBO show Real Sports too much in my COVID hibernation, but they sure like to spotlight people doing amazing things with their bodies while missing some limbs. Between the mountain climbers with mechanical legs and the kid golfer who's now playing baseball, also, despite having only one hand, people are doing more with less now than ever before, I guess. But we had our heroes in baseball overcoming adversity when we were kids, and they should be saluted as well. The more well-known of these two, obviously, is Jim Abbott, who famously threw a no-hitter as a member of the Yankees in 1993 against the Guardians. He had a remarkable career for someone born without a right hand. To see him field his position while balancing his glove on his stump was nothing short of extraordinary. Every time he did that, I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe he's doing that. And, yes, he pitched for my White Sox, so I had occasion to see him live, but he was awesome to watch before he got to the South Side. Abbott won 87 games at the major league level and had an ERA of 4.25 while pitching in the steroid era. That's something for a man with both hands. Nevertheless, just one. As for Curtis Pride, he struck a curious figure standing in at the plate with a huge honking hearing aid attached to his ear. Pride was an excellent athlete at many sports, despite being 95% deaf from birth due to a case of rubella. He was a starting point guard at the College of William & Mary, and before that, he won the 1985 FIFA Under-16 Soccer Championship, scoring the game-winning goal. But baseball was his destiny. He came up in 1993 as a Montreal Expo. His best year was 1996 as a Detroit Tiger, hitting .300 and going double-double in homers and steals. Pride turned in a long, if not productive, career, playing until 2006 with six different teams. But he and Abbott were proud representatives of the disabled community, and they were symbols of the idea that obstacles are meant to be hurdled and you really can do anything you want if you put your mind to it. Some inspirational big leaguers to remember, Jim Abbott and Curtis Pride.
Wow. It's not all murder, folks.
It's not. I don't have to be all negative. I can go positive.
No. You know, even the Albert Bell thing, he was a whack job, but he was a legitimate great baseball player. And now you get the, you know, Jim Abbott and Curtis Pride, and yeah, playing through disabilities. My son had a teammate on his team. Obviously he's six. This is the 6 and 7 year olds mostly playing, but yeah, he had a teammate on his team who had one hand.
Oh, wow.
You know, or one fully formed hand, I guess we should call it, you know, and where he had right. to throw the ball and then he'd have to switch, you know, it wasn't as fluent as Jim Abbott, but Jim Abbott had been doing it for, a long time, but that was always what was.
I'm sure Abbott wasn't fluid at six either.
That was the most incredible thing to watch was that transition that he made. That, you know, once he pitched, then being able to slip the glove on and then field his position.
Mm-hmm. And field it well.
Yeah. And that was always just like, and it was seamless. I'm sure, you know, he'd had a lifetime to practice it. But that was always the thing that I remember, you know, with that. With Curtis Pride, yeah, obviously you can't hear. So it means you can't hear boos. I guess that's a good thing. Turn that hearing aid down a little bit when you're on the road.
Can't hear any heckling. That's true.
Yeah. You know, that's obviously we're talking about Major League Baseball, but we talk about it frequently on this show, the experience of watching blind kids play softball.
Yeah, that was an experience.
If we would have a blind major leaguer, that would be something. Now, we already have blind umpires, so I think it would make a natural transition that we can move into having. No? Oh, okay.
No, I don't think so.
Hey!
you don't want me to start talking about umpiring with this White Sox Brewers series this weekend, because it's been a shit show of bad umpiring, not just behind the plate.
That's just the league. That's the whole league. It's not just a series or a game. If you watch enough games, you will find it.
It's terrible. It really is.
I know it's really bad because you can't go more than 2 or 3 days on Twitter without seeing Angel Hernandez or Joe West trending.
And it's not for their good work at the umpiring position.
No. I mean, balls down the middle called balls, balls a foot outside called strikes, and it just doesn't stop.
Yeah, CB Bugner trending on Twitter is never a good thing.
I don't ever really see that, but it's always Angel Hernandez. You'll always see this rotation of trending will be Joe West, Angel Hernandez, or Robot Ump. Or Robot Umps Now, or something like that.
Please.
Will always be hashtag Robot Umps Now. Although I guess the Robot Umps have been pretty inaccurate in some of the independent leagues and minor leagues, but they, you know, obviously if they're feeding in the, you know, Angel Hernandez program,
right?
that would make sense.
I would look at the humans running the program before I look at the program.
Just the stain on the good umpires that those guys leave. Oh.
Yeah,
because
it's a difficult job, but yeah.
But yeah, you pulled a little inspiration out of something where we're usually going to that dark place.
I did. I got so much darkness on the front and back end of our induction this year.
And
I wanted to get a little inspiration in there.
And two guys who will clearly never sniff the real Hall of Fame. So
right. Although Abbott probably has some material in there. They probably have his glove or cleats or something from the no-hit. I bet you they do.
Just for being, yeah, for the, such a uniqueness of the story, but not the player, not what he accomplished, not for overcoming the disability. I did the quick Google search. The Earl Weaver interview was not aired live. It was really just those two guys messing around.
Yeah.
And I guess
that was aired live.
Apparently it was found in a drawer by somebody working at the station, and they found it, and they were listening to like the old tapes, and they found that segment that was completely fake.
Right.
But like you said, you could clearly hear that those two guys were having the time of their lives.
Oh,
even the guy
gosh.
Who was trying to play the straight man was
he's cracking
having
up.
Trouble. He was having trouble keeping it together. But you know what? Those answers were great.
The planting the tomato plant, he almost didn't get through it because he knew it was coming.
But I'm wondering, though, about what, like, because that was clearly never meant to air. So I'm almost wondering if some of his opinions about the players were, like, his actual thoughts.
Probably. Probably exaggerated, but, yeah, probably had a germ of truth to it. I'm either that or if it was, like, he completely thought the opposite of him and he was just, you know, ribbing him.
Right.
And talking
he
shit
loved
about
the
him
guy, and he was, oh, he's lucky to even be on the team. Oh man!
Again, if a manager today would do a segment like that, it would be. I would love it, but it probably wouldn't be nearly as good because the guys today they don't have the same edges.
Yeah,
as the guys
the interview process. That's why when you get those bits of honesty, when you get the Richard Sherman, Bart Scott, you get any of those, you know, the famous coach. You know, like the Jim Morris stuff and Herm Edwards. You get any of that stuff. It's so genuine that that's why you want that because everything else is just so sort of saccharine.
Playoffs.
And that's what we remember. Yeah. We don't remember we just take one game at a time. You know, we remember we're on to Cincinnati. We're on to Cincinnati. You know, that's the stuff we remember.
Hello?
Yeah, that's a lot less memorable stuff these days because everybody's trying to be PC and make sure you don't offend and you got to make sure the sponsors aren't breathing down your neck saying, hey, what the hell did you just say the other day? You can't be saying
that. I mean, I think we've been on air long enough now that we were on air when Richard Sherman had the Aaron Andrews interview. And we loved it.
Yeah, it was awesome.
You know, we also said that you generally don't want to shove the microphone in the face of the guy who just, who coming out of the, right? That's also why you don't want to do those things. But yeah, they want to run up and they want to shove because that's what they want. They hardly ever get it, but that's what they're after. You know, they're after the, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. They're not after the, one game at a time.
Yeah, and the
I just want to thank the Lord,
And the guys that do that right after a game that have that's not what they're feeling. They're just saying what they think they need to say to get out of the interview.
Correct. Yeah, I just have a problem though. All these guys, they thank God when they do something good. But nobody blames them when they lose, or nobody's like, "Oh, it was the devil. The devil got me.
Damn devil again."
I guess God wanted me to lose. I went, oh, man, wait till somebody says that. Because they're all thanking God when they win. Oh, I just want to thank Jesus. Nobody thanks Jesus when they lose.
I don't know if I have any response to that either. I don't.
Because I'm right. That's why. Because they're like, that's bulletproof.
I got nothing to say to that. I got no answer for that.
It's the devil. That should be the answer. I want somebody to start going that way when they interview the guy who just threw the pick six to lose the game. He's like, well, I don't know. Just the devil was after me. Devil made me. Because God clearly intercepted that ball for that other guy and took it the other way. Jesus was on his team.
God loves our team. Our team is just we're just favored. We're just blessed. We just hashtag
blessed. We're
blessed.
That's right. Blessed. I'm so blessed. That was that. Was that the NFL draft that year?
I'm just blessed. I'm just so blessed.
Oh man, everybody was dropping that one. All right, one more to go. This is a quick one.
It is.
Well, it's been so airtight. There's not a lot for me. There's not a lot of like deep, meaningful stories that come out. This is a pretty rock solid, airtight group that you got so far here. They clearly all deserve to be in. You know, unexpected ones, which makes me feel really good because you haven't taken anything that I have for next year. Because my MLB done for next year.
Right.
Completely done. I hope nothing wipes off the, you know, memory off my phone, because then I'm screwed and I got to come up with five more. But yeah, we haven't overlapped. You haven't stolen any of mine, and we're pretty new into the baseball one. Oh, hold on a second. Take over for a second.
Uh-oh. I guess Jay had a father moment. I had to go take care of something that we discussed a potential inductee last show, and he was already on my list, and I didn't take him because I want Jay to take him, because it's really, you know, it's about his team, and it's about a moment for his team that he needs to be the one to make that induction, because it touched and affected him more than it affected me, although I was affected as well, as it turned out.
Wait, which one?
I was talking about that we discussed a potential inductee last show, and he was on my list already.
Oh,
and I didn't take him.
Oh,
and I didn't use him because it's your story.
I only put the requirement on it that you'd have to pull the audio. If you did that, I would have. That's one of those that we can't go into it unprepared. If you got the Earl, you know.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I didn't take it because it's your story. It affected you a lot more than it affected me.
Which is funny because we told the story on the last after show. We even went so far as to recount like where we were when it happened. Of course, we're talking about the infamous, only infamous if you're a Cubs fan, because it's not. Again, this is not a national story, but we're talking about Brent Brown dropping the fly ball in Milwaukee when the Cubs were in the midst of the first ever wild card chase, and literally doing everything that they could to not win the wild card.
And still found a way to win the fucking wild card.
Which ties in again to, you know, so that 98, that 98 season, that was the Cubs had just sucked for the whole decade of the 90s. They were not good. They were not good. And then I remember being at that 20 strikeout game in May, when Kerry Wood had the 20 strikeouts, and you had a feeling that this team wasn't great, but they were fun. And that wasn't the best Cubs team, obviously, that I've seen, but I have so many good memories of that 98 team, because they were memorable. Let's just say that.
There was a lot going on in 98. Yes.
You had the home run chase, right? You had the whole Sosa McGuire thing. You had Kerry Wood broke onto the scene that year, and then you had the Cubs be in the first ever NL wild card that year, and then winning a game 163 to get there.
Yes, they did.
And then getting swept by the Braves.
Well, but they got there. And
the Renegades, have they changed their name yet?
The Brave Hearts, that happened yet.
Okay.
Actually, the Mel Gibson connotation, I don't think that would work either. But anyway.
No. No.
Definitely don't want to.
They could change their name. If they want to keep the Mel Gibson thing going, they could call themselves the Sugar Tits.
I definitely don't think that one will be approved by baseball.
Oh. Jerseys would be interesting.
On to our last inductee.
I was trying to stretch the show out, filibustering there for you.
So anyway, the negativity returns. I said we're bookending our Chicago connection.
I have to say, this show has been light on murder and rape. So you better bring in it.
I'm bringing another infamous player in Chicago history. We started with Albert Bell, and let's continue and end with another infamous player that touched Chicago at one time. And boy, talk about infamous and talk about another psychopath and somebody that had some serious, serious mental issues. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the one and the only Milton Bradley.
But he's a winner at the game of life.
Not this one. That's a different Milton Bradley. That's the white guy. This is not the same guy.
Got it.
Milton Bradley was an outfielder for a whole mess of teams. He is infamous for being an ass everywhere he went.
Bradley, and he was a like good player. That's the sad part, too. You've actually bookended this with guys who were good baseball players, but just psychopaths.
Bradley, like Albert Bell, will be remembered for having a ton of potential that was wasted because neither dealt with adversity very well. Bradley's temper may have been hereditary. His father was a Vietnam vet cokehead who beat up Bradley's mother, so violence was a normal atmosphere from jump. He carried that throughout his career, starting with a brawl in the minors after being hit by a pitch. Probably because of his buffoonery, teams couldn't wait to trade him despite his productivity. He only played a couple of years in Montreal, the team that drafted him, before they sent him to Cleveland. It was in Ohio in 2003 where Bradley decided that he didn't feel like accepting a speeding ticket and simply drove off.
The natural thing to do.
Eventually, he was sentenced to 3 days in jail. The next year, he was shipped off to the Dodgers. That tenure was punctuated by a June 1st, 2004 ejection in which Bradley afterwards flung a full bag of baseballs onto the field. In September, a home fan threw a plastic bottle at him for botching a ball in the outfield, and Bradley threw it back at the guy. That got Bradley suspended for the rest of the season. Los Angeles sent him to Oakland during Hot Stove 2005. He was good for the A's, but they dealt him to the Padres the next summer. The antics took a truly ridiculous turn on September 23rd, 2007. In the heat of a playoff race, Bradley got so mad at umpire Mike Winters, who had cussed at Bradley earlier, that he tore his own ACL being restrained by his manager, Bud Black. The Pods would lose a one-game tiebreaker with the Rockies and miss the playoffs. Bradley moved on to Texas in 2008 and played well enough to make the All-Star game. All's well, right? No. In June, before the All-Star nod, Bradley heard some negative comments about him made by Royals broadcaster Ryan LaFever, and like any professional, decided to run up four flights of stairs to try to confront him before being restrained. In 2009, he made a one-year stop on the north side, racking up in his Briefs Cups tenure a suspension for bumping an ump, an assault on a Gatorade cooler after making an out, and throwing a ball into the stands after making a catch thinking there were three outs. They were only two. His verbal spats with manager Lou Piniella were reportedly legendarily hot, which is not a surprise. The Cubs traded Bradley to Seattle, where his career ended after the Mariners had enough and cut him. If you guessed that this hothead was a ball of fire off the field as well, you would be correct. Bradley racked up domestic violence charges against his first wife like Pac-Man going after yellow pellets. Monique Williams would die at age 33 from cirrhosis and cardiac arrest, and if that isn't the logical ending to being involved with Milton Bradley for 10 years, I don't know what is. He was charged with battery in 2018 of his second wife, Rachel. It was an absolute tornado of anger, frustration, and aggression anytime Milton Bradley appeared. No one earned the reputation of being infamous more than him. Ladies and gentlemen, our last inductee this year, Milton Bradley.
Wow. Heavy on the crazy. No murder. But that is a, again.
Well, I kind of count the first wife as almost.
Uh-oh.
You're 33. No, I'm not saying he did it to her, but I'm saying you're 33 and you die of cirrhosis and cardiac arrest.
I thought you were breaking news on the show.
No, I don't think he bent water. I don't think he took her out.
This just turned into Nancy Grace over here.
I mean, tell you something. No, I'm
America's Most Wanted.
He stressed her to death. You don't die at 33 from cirrhosis and cardiac arrest unless you're stressed the fuck out. And you got to be stressed the fuck out being with Milton Bradley. It makes perfect sense to me. So he may not have killed her, but he kind of killed her, in my opinion.
Massively talented. Again, you don't get signed by that many teams if they don't think you can play, right? Especially if you're a headache.
It wasn't just being signed. Other teams kept saying, "Yeah, we'll take him. We'll take a chance. Yeah, we'll give you something for him."
We'll give you something for him, or we'll sign you to a 1-year deal, or you know, not a lot of multi-year deals. People knew better. I think a lot of these teams are probably hoping that let's give him a 1-year deal. Hope he doesn't like destroy our future, and then we can trade him at the deadline. Things aren't working out, you know, because he's got the potential. I remember when he was with the Cubs, he could play.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
he always could play.
Yeah, he was a good hitter. He was good on defense. I liked watching Milton, but yeah, he was a nut job. And you found the two, and yeah, you got one on the north side, one on the south side.
Man, you're talking about two absolute crazies.
Neither one of them had overly long tenures or stays with our hometown teams, but they definitely made their mark everywhere they went. They weren't even of that, like even you with Albert Bell talking about, they weren't that guy you loved if he was on your team, but you hated him if he was on the other team.
You kind of didn't like him even on your team.
These were just kind of bad guys.
Didn't matter what uniform they put on. He's like, I still don't like him. He's not really good at hitting baseballs. When they're not trying to tear umpires' heads off or beating up their wives.
Yeah, I didn't realize, and I'm sure you didn't even hit every point. That's a laundry list of trying to fight people. That's just like you said, that's just a lot of anger.
Just everywhere he went, every time new town, new fresh start. Oh look, he's cussing somebody else out. Oh look, he's trying to attack the other team's broadcaster. Oh boy, now he's throwing bottles at fans in the stand. Ugh. Just everywhere he went. So yeah, that's my induction. We got 9-4 minutes live, and
that's an unexpected list. But it's always unexpected. I don't think we've reached the point with a lot of these where we don't go for all the obvious low hanging fruit.
Well, in baseball, we have so many because it's relatively new. There's so many guys still and incidents that we haven't covered. And football, it is getting a little thinner as the years go on. We definitely have covered a lot of territory and sounds and speeches and sound drops and inanimate objects. Everything you could possibly come up with for football. So I still think I got a lot left in football, but I admit it's getting thin. I still have a lot of names written down that you'd probably be like, oh yeah, that guy. I remember what he did.
Yeah.
So there's still a good number of those guys.
We get some of those moments where all of a sudden the palm hits the forehead and we go, well, wait, he's not in yet. How did we leave him out? Yeah, how did we miss that one? Well, my list this year is I got a fun list. I'm all over the place,
Yeah.
I like the every other year format that we've got going on where we can kind of do, we swap off. And that's why I like that we dropped in the baseball sort of as that alternate one, because that gives us both something to do each year. Instead of just waiting 2 years for our show, the two loves are baseball and football.
Right.
So, although we
informally discussed adding a third Hall of Infamy.
I was thinking about
catch everything else.
The Hall of Everything Else. Or I was thinking about, instead of calling it the Hall of Infamy, you'll like this one. The Catch-All of Infamy.
that's clever. Thank you.
So that would be, because trust me, there's a lot that we could come up with. So, I don't think we'll do it this year because we're sort of on schedule now.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking next year for off season, maybe we start planning on each, maybe we do an inaugural one where each of us come up with the five for what I'm now going to call the catch-all of infamy. So see if that catches on.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's a little play on Hall of Infamy.
It is.
And it does. It catches all the rest of the sports. I would prefer to keep it more sports focused.
Yeah, because if we open it up too wide, then now we're going back into, you know, high school. And
yeah, but I want to keep it more sports related because we do, you know, as people listen to this show would know, we do talk about other sports.
Mm-hmm.
We had two shows in a row where we talked intelligently with each other about basketball.
Oh, that guy Giannis, that Giannis guy. I don't know if he's a star or not. I don't know.
We didn't get our caller to call up and weigh in because he didn't give us an answer. Right?
he asked us the question.
He asked us the question, but we never really got the answer of like what he thought. Like, do you use it? Because I think my answer is, well, that's a dumb question. But it wasn't framed up to us as it was his question. It was framed up to us as he heard this question in sports media, which that's one of those shockingly dumb. That's how I know it's a real question because it's so dumb. It sounds like one of those first in pizza type questions that they throw. I could totally see them throwing that at, you know, Stephen A. Smith or Max Kellerman or any of those guys or any around the horn. And they're always, if Giannis wins my brain hurt when I heard that one. I was like, you mean he's not a superstar? Well, if he wasn't before that game.
Well, your answer is.
He is now.
But your answer was correct, that the only reason anyone would think he's not a superstar is because he's in Milwaukee.
Yes. Oh, thank you. We didn't have time to dissect my answer. I didn't realize that you were in alignment with me on that one.
There's nothing to dissect. That's just so stupid. If he was playing for the Knicks, he would be the megastar of megastars.
Yeah, he'd be the East Coast LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And everyone will be talking up how, you know, it's a collision course, the Knicks and Lakers, LeBron versus Giannis, and that's all everybody will be wondering and thinking about.
Yeah. So yeah, we can get into that into the after show because we can talk about that experience and sort of dissect because we did our last show right before Game 6.
Right.
And that was coming right off of that crazy Game 5 finish where we had done that show just a week ago, kind of doing our catch up show. You know, doing a little housekeeping, just felt like, oh, you know, we kind of have that little clock that goes off in our heads that says it's that time for a show. Ding.
Mm-hmm.
It's been too long.
I mean, we're making all this money from the ad revenue. Oh. We got to give the people what they want.
Yeah. You can't buy much anymore for $5.
You can't even buy a football.
I will tell you, you handle the dues. Next time I send in the dues, it's going to be that check's going to be $5 less.
Oh, I wouldn't think to charge you full freight. Absolutely. You earned that $5 less.
That's right.
No
I
doubt
held up
about
my
it.
Hand. when that next check comes, whatever it's for, that five, it's going to be ending in a five. You just watch.
Mm-hmm. Five and five.
Don't spend that all in one place. We didn't get 20, right? We got 10.
We got 10 and like 10 cents. I have no idea what why they decided to do it like that. I was holding out on
now that next, cat's out of the bag. You're holding out. So that next check's going to end in $4.95.
I was holding out that dime.
Yeah.
Keeping that dime for myself.
I thought you were going to keep it for our week 18 picks this year.
It's not a physical dime. I can't flip it. I can't.
Which sounds weird saying.
It really does. Everything's going to be weird about it.
Everything's going to be, yeah. But the, you know, yeah.
The whole uneven number of games is going to be weird. Everything's going to be
weird. Having the teams playing, well, you know, we're on a collision course with an 18-game schedule.
Definitely.
Honestly, I think we are only a few years away here from two preseason games. And just because what you're going to have is you're going to have the teams, and rightfully so, complaining that they're getting 9 or 8 home and road games.
Exactly. All right, we're getting shafted. We're getting 9 road games this year, and all our division competitors are getting 8 or something like that.
I know. Yeah, they're talking about my Falcons this year only get 7 home games because they're getting a London game as one of their home
games.
So they only had 8 home games to start, and one of them now is going to be in London. So they only have 7 home games. And do they have a right to complain? Yeah. I think they had a right. I don't want to say this because people think, oh, you're being a fan. Any team getting that would have a right to complain.
That's right.
Normally it's the Jags, right? It's usually the Jaguars getting that.
It feels like the Jags are moving towards having like 4 of their 8 home games there in London.
Feels like they're on their way to being the London Jags.
The London Jags, yes.
Yeah. So, we are in the after show, just like
we
that.
We are.
So, yeah, all right.
Just like that.
NBA Finals Game 6.
Giannis was a superstar before that. Now Giannis is a megastar.
Yes, I read
Good
the
night,
same
everybody. Thing.
I read this. Yeah, that's it. That's all she wrote. I read the same things that you were talking about, so I had it all verified that, yes, the ratings were up, but they were still bad. And that sort of ties in. You know, they were up 30%, 32%, I think, was the number over the bubble year last year. But it's the 4th lowest rated finals of the last 17 or 18 years overall. So I don't know what the ones, obviously you had the bubble and then you have 2 others. I'm wondering what those other 2 were. I'm curious. I'm not going to look it up because you don't expect Bucks and Suns to be a big media draw. So the fact that it beat anything, I guess, is a sign of things are moving. I'd take a positive away from that. Plus the fact that they increased so much coming off of the bubble.
I was absolutely about to say the exact same thing. I was pleasantly surprised that Suns Bucks was up 32% from LeBron last year.
Yeah.
Like, that's stunning. The fact that they did that much better.
I don't know if there's LeBron fatigue.
I don't know if it's that as much as it was just the weirdness of the timing.
The bubble.
Of the NBA Finals,
yeah.
And also the location being in the bubble.
Yeah.
I think all of that combined is why it was so low last year.
Yeah, but
because the finals happened even later in the year than this, right? This is late as hell for the finals, but last year was even...
This is a month later than it should be right now. Last year was really weird because they finished,
right.
And then the season started.
Hey, as the NBA Finals is over, now get ready for the regular season, which starts in 3 days.
I want to say that started bleeding into football season. I mean, it was long. It went long. It went really long, and that's what caused them to have that Christmas start.
Right.
Which they had then toyed around with the idea of, like, well, this is actually really working. Maybe we should do this Christmas start every year. But I have a sense they're going more back to that Halloween type start, early November start again.
Yeah, the brief talk about starting Christmas every year was combined with the possibility of shortening the season, which is not going to happen because that takes money out of owners' pockets. So that's
correct.
That's a non-starter.
Correct.
It was definitely football and baseball going on while basketball was finishing up with the finals. So it definitely felt like a complete afterthought. Like, oh, the finals are still going, really? I'm not surprised that the ratings are so low for that.
But people who didn't watch missed a hell of a series.
They did. It was very good basketball play.
It was. If you take away that first half of Game 6. That was awful basketball. That was Phoenix playing as bad as they could possibly play in the first quarter to then only be outdone by the Bucks playing even worse in the second quarter. And you ended up with a game, I think it was 5 or 6 point lead for Phoenix at halftime. And I was just like, I just watched the Bucks completely crap the bed in that second quarter. And they weren't getting their doors blown off. I knew what happened.
And they're only down.
Yeah, I knew at halftime they were going to win.
6.
Yeah, because I'm like, they're not as bad as what they just did in that second quarter. And Phoenix wasn't nearly as bad as they were in that first quarter, you know. And then, you know, they're talking about all the stats, like the Bucks in the first quarter had 7 or 8 turnovers, and they were up. That's how bad Phoenix played in that first quarter, and then the Bucks turned right around and were like, hold my beer. You know, oh yeah, watch this, you know, and then this is, but the second half was very good. So anybody who sat through and slaved through that first half and turned off the TV actually missed an incredibly exciting second half. Not, and what ends up being some of the most exciting drama of the night was watching Giannis refuse to miss free throws.
Unbelievable, huh?
Like, that's the superstar.
Like, when it matters, when it counts, yeah. when the championship's on the line, I'm going to do everything I need to do to put my team over the top, including drain free throws.
Yeah, 17 out of 19 from the line for a guy who's a 57, 58% free throw shooter.
Believe it or not, 71.7% career, according to what I'm reading on his bio page on RotoWorld. But yeah, 17 of 19 is still unbelievable, considering how much struggling that he was doing. First player since Shaq in 2000 to score at least 40 points three different times in a finals. I think that's superstar.
They won every game.
And they won every one of those games. First player in history of the league to record at least 40 points with at least 10 rebounds and at least 5 blocks in a finals game. I think that's superstar stat.
And to save that for the closeout game.
For when they needed it the most.
Yeah. So your big knock is you can't hit the free throws. You go out and you hit the free throws. You're playing on a bum knee. And don't be shocked if it's a month from now and the news leaks out that he was way more hurt than they were letting on.
Definitely.
Because the dunks weren't there. It was a lot of layups.
But even when they needed the dunks, he got up and did that too.
He still found a way, but there was, you know, and earlier in the game, drains a three. He was starting to hit some mid-range jumper.
Finding a way.
You don't realize that. Sometimes you don't realize it when you're watching it, but then you go back and you're like, that was all time. That was all-time finals performance.
And then to have the
block to win game four.
Mm-hmm.
The dunk to win game five after the holiday strip, and then that performance to just cap it all off in game six. But I'm still not sure if he's a superstar yet, though. Still,
got to ask Lou in still, Jersey is the only one who can make that determination. He's the one that asked the question, so therefore he's the only one that can possibly answer.
Okay, that the two MVPs, the NBA Finals MVP, and statistically, what would be considered one of the best NBA Finals performances ever?
One of the most dominant finals in history, absolutely. Yeah. Whether you're watching live or whether you're just looking at the stats, no matter how you want to look at it, absolutely dominant.
And you think of the guys who've played in the NBA Finals, even just in our lifetimes, and how they've dominated, and this might have topped a lot of those. And that's not recency bias. It's in the numbers.
No, that's just watching the damn game.
just
watching the Greek Freak be a Greek Freak.
Don't want to just talk about Giannis because the stones on Chris Middleton to hit that jumper at the end of that game was immense because that was a contested shot and that didn't touch the rim.
Hey, he was the second banana that you need. Nobody wins it alone. We say that all the time.
That's
all
true. He was the Pippen. Superstars,
everyone needs a Pippen. Every star needs at least two, one or two other guys to come through for him. Nobody wins a championship all by themselves. And Middleton definitely was a great second banana. Jrue Holiday was a very key third, fourth guy. They even got contributions from former Bull Bobby Portis, who
we didn't talk about him much. Did we talk about him with his home road splits? Because the fans, they love him. He's the fan guy. He's the pump-up guy, and he took over sections of that game.
Yeah, he's got that energy. He had that at fucking Arkansas back in college. He's always been that guy. He has those streaks where he gets this wild look in his eyes and, like, you can't stop him. Like
he's a complete ghost on the road. In that series, he feeds off the energy of the fans. The fans love him, and you can feel it. And he's got the crazy eyes thing going, but he's the guy, talking earlier, he's the guy you love him when he's on your team, and you hate him
right
when he's on the other team.
And
you know the Phoenix fans were watching this going, like, Bobby Portis, really?
That piece of shit. Come on. Yeah, they probably pulled a Earl Weaver on him. He needs to go out and get a prick in his ass or something.
But yeah, no, I talked about
him when
depth,
the Bulls drafted him.
Yeah, I talked about the depth of that Bucks team, and it played out.
Mm-hmm.
And they but not household it. Names. I mean, you can right. work your way towards being household names when you go out and you win an NBA Finals. So you know they're going to get a lot. They'll be getting more of the primetime games. We got to put them on. You know, if Christmas isn't Bucks Lakers, I don't know what is.
No.
Right?
I think that's a great call. Yes, I think that's pretty obvious.
Right, they're going to want Giannis and LeBron on Christmas Day. You know that.
Yeah.
NBC can send me the royalties for that.
I'm sure they were considering it before. Every champion needs those role players that you have no idea who they were before, and they may not do anything after. I remember those Bulls teams that got contributions from guys like Judd Bushler and
Steve Kerr.
Absolutely.
The Bulls always had that like white
Bobby Hansen
guy. Yeah, Bobby Hansen and John Paxson.
Yep.
And Steve Kerr and Craig Hodges. Now these aren't white guys anymore, but Craig Hodges. They always had that three ball guy. B.J. Armstrong. These guys would somehow they'd step up or they'd hit those key shots. And the Pat Connaughton thought he was that guy, but he was
he was trying.
He was trying to be that guy.
But, he wanted to be.
Yeah. Sir, you are no John Paxson.
Ideas of being the next Kerr in his eyes.
He thought he was. I'll at least give that to Pat Connaughton. Was he had the confidence to be the guy, and then just bricked his shots.
Now here's maybe something for a possible catch-all of fame inductee. I remember
we're already thinking about it.
Big, bulky dude with not that much talent, but got on a hot streak during an NBA Finals, and all of a sudden there's Scott Williams coming through and getting a big free agent contract, basically pulling a Scott Mitchell and just cashing in at the exact right moment. So no matter who you are, you can if you get hot at the right time, you can make a name for yourself.
Is Scott Mitchell's not in the Hall of Infamy, by the way?
It's going back too long. I can't pull any NFL players and say they're definitely in or not. I don't know. I'd have to look at the list.
Don't think he's
in. I think you're right.
Wow.
I'd have to go update your list.
That's shocking to me.
That's my point. There's still guys.
Football. Well, obviously, let's see. With football, you have 53-man rosters.
Right.
You know, so I'm trying
to go
back. A lot
more guys that can make names for themselves.
That would have been August. You got the 2020 NFL Hall. Oh, that's right, because I'm so terrible at posting my stuff on the blog. I'm bad. I admit it.
No, like I got the list. So
but there's the – here it is. Here's the – yeah, you got the master list. And I wow, this goes back to 2011? This will be our
– Yes.
Oh, my God. We've been doing the NFL ones for 10 years? Oh, that's right, because it started on the blog, because that's right, because when we did the first one on the podcast, we kind of did a recap.
Yes, to look back.
Of who all was in. And, we have a ghost. I forgot we had a ghost in the Hall of Infamy.
We got everything.
We have a little, we have a porno movie. We have a ghost. We have a father-son combo. Oh my God! We have actual just paraphernalia.
All sorts of objects. If I actually could build a real Hall of Infamy, like a brick and mortar,
you'd have to go and find these things. Shockingly, you might even have to update the Tim Tebow one as he's trying his comeback now. Scott Mitchell is not in the NFL. That just shows you how deep the roster is.
Yep, there's a lot. There's a lot of guys.
NFL. Baseball, we started, does this sound right? We started baseball in 2017. So that's a much shorter list.
Yeah, that sounds right.
But it's a good list.
Sure.
And I
and
do like
plenty,
how we
plenty
do,
left in baseball.
You've got a tendency that you sneak in combos. So you've done like, you know, you did Doc Gooden and Daryl Strawberry, and you did all the two-way guys. So you're lumping in multiple players. I did that with the law firm,
right?
Of Womack, Glanville, and Dye.
Yeah, sometimes
which is one of the biggest inside jokes that we have, because that is just a fantasy play. And I kept telling you should draft those guys late every year, and you never would, and they would just kill it. They'd just rake.
Yep.
That's fine, but yeah.
No, if it jumps out that there's an obvious connection that I just have to make them sort of an entry as a duo or a trio, then I will do that. Like this year, Jim Abbott could have had an entry by himself, but I really did want to think back also to Curtis Pride, because those are the two that stuck out to me. Like it was shocking when you would see Jim Abbott pitch with the missing right hand, and it was to me, equally shocking to see Curtis Pride standing up there, like I said, with his humongous hearing aid. And it's like, what? Wow, he's really up there deaf as hell and playing Major League Baseball. Okay, well, you're not going to accuse him of telling anybody what's coming or communicating with his teammates because he's deaf. He's completely deaf. He doesn't know what's happening.
And then I forget last year, you know, to keep my theme from football going, I got the father-son combo last year.
Yeah,
I like your write-up. White trash White Sox fans. I like that.
Oh, God.
That's just what you're famous for. You're just famous for being white trash White Sox fans. So,
pretty much.
That's
good. Gotta love the Legues.
The wing of quotes. Yeah, we've got it all. We have a cheese grater in there. Just for... So the baseball one, it feels like we have just scratched the surface with baseball.
No, certainly.
So I'm guessing now you just go in and update the master list.
Yeah, I'll do that either after this show tonight or tomorrow morning. It won't be long. It'll definitely be because I don't have to work tomorrow. So if I don't do it tonight, I'll be around all day tomorrow. And I'll just update the master list and keep doing that after every show. I'll do it again after you do your football entry in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. So we're leaving for vacation tomorrow, so that'll be good. I'll be off the grid, so to speak, for a week. That's going to be nice because we're actually staying at a cabin up on Lake Superior. That's up there. So we're going to be up there. It looks like it's going to be, not too hot. You know, it's supposed to be like low upper 70s, low 80s the whole time we're there. We are literally right on the shore of the lake where we're staying, so that's going to be nice. We're excited. That's just to get a week away, sort of the opposite of Branson, which was just go, 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 and oh, my God. You just look at places and they cost money, it felt like. Mm-hmm. Everything we did was $70, didn't matter where we went. It was dinner, $70. It was... the arcade, $70. Mini golf, 70, everything. Just figure that's what they should just do. Every place you walk to in Branson, they're like, just give us $70.
Like everything in the Dollar Tree is a dollar. Every activity in Branson, $70.
$70. Yeah, go to take the kids to the aquarium, $70. That was an expensive trip, and it wasn't a long trip, but I was beat after.
It couldn't have
Branson
been too long at that rate because you would have been out of money.
Yeah, we've been broke. It was just go, go, go. It was an assault. It was like Vegas was to what, remember, like how tired you were after Vegas?
Oh, don't remind me.
I was out of commission for 2 weeks after. Like, I came home to be on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
After the craziness and all the walk-in and just the overload on your senses. That's what kind of like Branson was. Really was it was just a lot. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed it. It would have been quite that hectic. I'm not familiar with Branson, so
it's more, you know, I would use the Wisconsin Dells up here as a good example, but with more shows. I don't know.
Okay.
You were in Pigeon Forge, right? You drove through Pigeon Forge, you know, with Dollywood and all that. It's similar, kind of like that, where they have all the shows. And that's probably the closest analogy to a place that you've been to, but just on it's just more. So imagine what's going on down there in the Pigeon Forge area. Just imagine more of that.
Right.
And kind of spread out over an area. You drive right through it to get into Gatlinburg.
Right. Yeah. We did the cabin thing secluded and completely relaxed and whatnot because we went past the really busy areas. And we really enjoyed our cabin trip with the possible exception of dying every time we went around a corner. Because again, there was nothing around those corners if you went off the edge except air.
What's that around the corner? Just the Grim Reaper.
It's just death. It's just certain death.
Standing there with the bony finger pointing out at you.
Yeah.
Around every corner.
With warps in the road. Like, it's bad enough trying to drive the shit on regular pavement. And then there's, like, curves that just fall off if your tire goes over there. Like you have
aren't
no chance.
Aren't these curves supposed to be banked for the way I'm turning, not banked towards the cliff?
Right. What the hell?
It don't make no sense to me.
I did not come up here to drive Mario Kart. I came up here for a fucking vacation. Jesus.
I will tell you, there was a stretch of road. It was straight as an arrow, but it was probably the most scared I've ever been driving, and it was in Tahoe. It was down there with my wife. You're on the south end of the lake, and you're coming away from, like, one of the parks areas where you were down by the water, and it starts going up and up and up, and you're going up for a while, and now you're like way above the lake. You've got to be like 1,000 feet up the side of this thing, up above the lake, and the road just goes straight across, and it's just the road. Both sides dropped off completely.
Ah.
So it wasn't like there was a cliff on one side, like in the mountains usually you're driving, you've got the mountain on one side, and then you've got the death on the other side, right? You usually got that depend. No, this was death on both sides and no guardrails.
Whoa.
And this stretch had to be at least a mile long. It felt longer, but there wasn't much shoulder. There wasn't a car width of a shoulder. And it was, so you're talking about a straight road. Just keep the car straight.
Don't get sleepy.
But no margin for error.
Yeah, don't be drowsy driving.
It's crazy. Man. I have never, anywhere I've been driven on anything like that where it was just complete drop off on both sides. It's usually like what I'm used to in the mountains out west or even down south. You're in the slope. So one side, you'll fall to your death. The other side, you'll crash into the cliff.
Right.
Not death on, not just, you're going to hurtle to your death either way.
Let me write that down. Avoid Tahoe.
Lake Tahoe, yeah. But beautiful, beautiful place to go because that's by Reno. So when we went out there, we flew into Reno, and then you take a bus ride down to Tahoe. It was an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. But we won money the first night we were there, so we decided, we won it. We won like $2,000 the first night we were there on a free trip.
Wow.
That's even better. On free play money. That's the trifecta, right?
Yeah. How did you swing that?
My wife had been in like one of these casino tour things before I met her. My wife likes to gamble, so like going to the casino, nothing wrong with that. So she was in one of these tours. She used to go with her mom. So she was in one of these casinos. We get a free trip. We get a free trip to Tahoe. So then it's Harrah's. So Harrah's has this deal where it's on their website or whatever, my wife finds it, and it says, well, if you're staying for at least 3 nights, you get $300 in free play.
I'm like,
we're staying there for free, so they're clear. Nope. My wife was like, well, I'm still going to go check. They checked our reservation. That's all they didn't check to see that we didn't pay for the room. They just looked at the reservation. Right?
Oh, 3 nights.
And they go, 3 nights, here's your stuff. So we're thinking it's $300 in free play. No. I've never seen this in my life at a casino. They literally just gave my wife $300 in cash. So this is insane. So we're on the free trip already, free plane ride, free room, and they just gave us $300 in cash.
They must really like
my
your
wife's
wife.
Like, what the hell? She goes and she puts $100 or no, she puts a 50. She's like, I'm going to go do a high stakes one, you know, cause they're, you know, they're giving me the money. So she goes to the machine. It was a top dollar machine. I remember the name of the game. It was one of these ones where if you get the bonus, it gives you all these bids and then you can pick whichever bid you want. She's like, she puts a $50 bill in there. It's $15 a spin.
Yes, I know.
So she's like, I'm going to get 3 spins. I'm like, fair enough. Third spin, bonus. Then we win $1,800. So we are at this casino that we paid nothing to go to, nothing to fly to, and we're in the casino for 15 minutes, and we're up $2,000. I am the guy who'd be like, we're done.
Right.
But we still have like 4 days, you know? But I can be that guy. I'm the guy who could literally drive an hour to go to the casino, walk in, hit right away, and be like, let's go. Mission accomplished.
Now I'm done.
But no, my wife's like, no, we drove all this way. We're going to play. So, but that paid for every meal. And so we were initially just going to stay in Tahoe. There's enough to do there. You got Tahoe on one side, and then there's another little town right on the border because you're literally on the border between Nevada and California. So we just rented a car. We took a drive all the way around the lake. It was gorgeous. I mean, it was cold and windy, but it was gorgeous. And so the day after that, there ended up being like this horrible rainstorm where we were. And then we woke up the next morning after that, and it was just all the mountain peaks around us were all covered with snow.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah. It was amazing. So, and the whole trip was free. Now on that day where we were reined in at the casino, we lost probably half the money back, but we came home up. It wasn't our money.
Exactly. That's the definition of playing with house money.
Yeah, when you never have to tap into the money that you took with you to lose, if you come home with that money and more, you're good. That was a good trip. Other than the fact that I had a sinus infection and bronchitis on that trip.
Ooh.
Yeah, I had it so bad I couldn't taste our food. I remember we're sitting at Cinnabon.
And you can't smell it?
I couldn't taste it or smell it.
Oh, that's
awful. I'm sitting there and I'm eating it, and I got about 3 bites in. I'm like, why am I bothering eating this? This is horrible for me. And the whole point of it is tasting it. So I just stopped eating it.
Yeah, I can't even fathom being at a Cinnabon and not being able to smell it. That's just...
Couldn't smell it or taste
that's
it.
Torture.
That was one of the, you know, maybe that was COVID. I have no idea. Maybe I had COVID 12 years ago. This is 2009 that we went on. Yeah, it was October of 2009. So, I mean, we weren't even engaged when we went on that trip yet.
Yeah, I don't know. Me and my wife had something, COVID or mono or something, when we came back from Vegas. I don't know what the fuck that was.
You had the broke blues, because I remember that sad last day when you were tapped out.
Yeah, I was hoping to get the trip that you're talking about, playing with house money, because I was up pretty nice after the first couple of days there.
Yeah, you and I did pretty well on the tables the first couple of days, and then it just all went south.
It just turned. Oh, my goodness. It just turned so bad.
Well, you had the benefit of having me playing on a table game that I'd never played before, which is usually, that's a winner. Right? That's why you always want the person play. So, you haven't been to the casino in a while, have you?
No, I haven't.
So we go to the casino last week. I didn't talk about this. So they have craps there now.
Okay.
It's literally craps, like giant, like Price is Right sized dice inside of like a trouble bubble.
Okay.
So there's no table, right? There's nobody because basically you sit down in a chair with a little computer in front of you, and you have your very own little trouble bubble. And that's craps. I'm like, I like craps, but the whole part of the fun of craps is the atmosphere at the table.
Exactly. It's gathering around all these strangers and just racking up all this money.
If you ever walk into a casino and you close your eyes and you listen for the screaming, just walk towards the screaming, that's the craps table. It's always the most vocal game, right? Because it's got the action, right? More than it doesn't – roulette doesn't have action. Roulette's just math. Somebody might win big on roulette and then they get the big pop, but you don't get everybody. Like, craps is that one game where everybody can win on the roll of the dice and everybody mm-hmm. can lose.
Wow.
So that, yeah, there's no fun. You don't even get to roll the dice.
Yeah, that doesn't sound
good. It's literally
good.
Just this little popper that pops the dice up in the air and it comes down. It's literally the trouble bubble. And who wants to gamble that way? That is so sad. I couldn't imagine. There was nobody playing, by the way. But the games were all still going. So. Every 15, 20 seconds, the little thing would pop up, and the dice would flop around. And you'd be looking like, what? Part of craps is feeling like, even though it's totally random, that you are holding the dice. You are in control, right?
I'm hot.
Right. Every other game, you don't get to spin the ball on the roulette wheel. The dealer's always giving you the cards in the card game. But in craps, yep. you have the dice in your hand.
Yep.
If you crap out, you crapped out. So, yeah, watching the thing pop up. Oh, so sad. And now then the roulette wheels are all in the big bubble.
They don't even have poker at that casino that you're talking about.
But all the blackjack and all that stuff is all like video boards.
Yeah.
Of the video dealer. It has ruined one of my favorite aspects of going to the casino, which is playing tables, because the tables are social.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not always I work in sales, so I'm not usually the guy who wants to go and be social when I'm off work. Because I have to do it all day at work. So I tend to not be that way when I'm not working. But every once in a while, I'd get that itch. You want to just go sit at a table with a group of people and play some cards or shoot some dice, you know? Have the experience together.
We were talking about this last year when COVID hit, that there's going to be some things that change and will never go back to what it used to be. And that might be one of the things. Like, because I know I'm not going to go sit next to anybody and play poker right now because I'm just not going to do it. You don't know who's got what
right.
or, you know. No, I'm sure it's not set up for you to do it either down here. They got in Tunica, they do have poker tables, but I'm shocked
there's still casinos down there in Tunica because the last time I was there, it was sad.
They're barely hanging on, yeah. And this might wipe them out totally, but I know they're there because I was looking couple weeks ago when my wife went to she actually went to Europe for 2 weeks, and
which was shocking when I saw when my wife showed me that your wife went on a plane overseas to Greece. I was like, what you were describing was like someone hiding under the covers afraid of COVID to then be on a plane. I give her full credit. To be on a plane and go and doing all that I wouldn't even do that right now.
Jason, when I tell you that she literally had a box of like 100 masks with her that she packed with her, I'm not exaggerating. Like she had every protection.
But still
did it. She had. She did. She did. There's an aspect of a time element as far as. She didn't get the trip for free, but she did get like a great price on it due to her work as a travel agent.
Yeah.
But it had to be used by a certain time. So this wasn't that she was just itching to get over there right now. It was that it had to be done at this point in time or else it wasn't going to happen. So that's pretty much why she did that. The exact same scenario applies for these two trips that we have coming up. The reason I didn't go to Greece is because I'm saving my vacation time because we're supposed to be going to Mexico in September, and then we're supposed to be going on a Caribbean cruise in October. So, Miss Scared of COVID is absolutely planning to get out and do some more traveling, also because these are trips that she earned from her work as a travel agent that are going to expire if she doesn't use them. But things have not changed as far as she's back home and still doesn't want to go out to dinner because of COVID. So go figure. But
she did it.
But she did it.
So be proud. I saw that and I was like, wow, you know what? That's progression as far as like that's great. And I'm guessing she enjoyed it.
She kind of had a me experience. She was she was complaining about the
but really had a great time.
But she had a she was talking about the history and how beautiful it was, and just had a, an absolute fabulous time while also complaining about the fact that it's Greece. It's not all that modern as far as walking places. There's a lot of elevation. There's a lot of hills. There's a lot of inclines.
Yes.
There's a lot of ways to tear yourself up.
There's a reason they call it ancient Greece.
And she came back home and her knee has not been the same since, basically. So
well, yeah,
because
it's it's not flat. It's not Kansas.
No.
It is. I mean, it's mountains and volcanoes, but it is. It is thick with history that we don't have here.
Definitely.
We see buildings that were built in the 1800s, and we're like, ooh, that's historic.
Ooh, yeah, look how old that is.
We ain't got nothing on them.
No.
So I'm glad she did it.
Yeah.
Farther than I've ever gone. I've been to Canada a couple of times.
Yeah, I would have done it. Like I said, under my vacation days for these other trips that were supposed to be taken. So, yeah, she did it with my uncle's wife, and they both had a very good time. Although, like I said, my wife was kind of beat up and banged up from all the walking and inclines and stuff. And it's not just the ruins. It's not just inclines. It's there was some point where they took like a little boat across to some place for a day trip, but for some reason they didn't take the same boat back afterwards. They had to go climb and walk up all these stairs and inclines and whatnot to get to a bus in order to get back to their hotel. And I don't know why they decided to do that. And what's worse was whatever the tour guide or whatever I was leading him around takes them to a certain point and basically says, okay, this is where I leave you, and the bus that you have to take is up there, and she's pointing up, so they have to go up, they have to climb, and there's no, there's not modern civilization, there's no escalators, there's no elevators, it's not something that's easy to do. If you're got some health issues, you're not in the best shape, it was tough on my poor wife. She basically was sort of out of commission after the first few days as far as taking a lot of the tours, but she did manage to still take some tours and take some pictures. And like I said, she did say she enjoyed herself a lot, even though she was down for the count for most of the trip.
Wow. Well, hey, you know what though? Like I said, she did it.
She did. She sure did. So we've talked about the weeks that I'm going to be on these trips and won't be doing these shows. So you're going to be set up with the cute factors, and you're going to be
Come up with something. Yeah.
Going to be on target to do some shows with maybe with the kiddies or by yourself or something like that.
I think that we could make that fun.
I'm actually going to grab my date book because I'm old as fuck. And I actually buy a date book every year and write in it instead of keeping everything in my phone, because what if you lose your phone and then you're fucked? So I write everything down still.
That's what the cloud is for.
I don't know what the cloud is. I don't know what that means.
All the data on your phone is uploaded into the cloud.
I don't know.
That way, if you lose your phone and you get a new phone, it just puts it all right back on your phone.
Mm-hmm. Or I can just write it down in my date book. So those weekends that I'm going to be gone are the Sunday the 19th. So that's probably week.
That would be two or three.
Let's see. Labor Day is the 6th. They don't start before Labor Day. So week one is probably going to be the 12th. So that's going to be week two.
Okay. Yeah, they're starting late this year.
Okay. So it's probably week two. So September the 19th, I won't be around, and then October the 17th, we're going to be, and that's still up in the air though. The October one is supposed to be a cruise on Virgin, and Virgin is, if you go by the website, they're acting like they're going to be cruising by them, but the fact is
they don't know.
The fact is they're canceled right now through October the 1st. So to assume that they're going to be going on the 10th, which is when we're supposed to be leaving, that's taking a big assumption. So we're definitely holding on and waiting to see as far as that goes. But yeah, if that does go, that'll be the weekend of the 15th or the 17th rather. 15th is our actual 10-year anniversary. That we're actually going to be on this trip. We're supposed to be on this trip this cruise to the Caribbean for that anniversary week. So if it comes off, it'll be great. And if not, then we're going to be sitting here for our 10-year anniversary going, man, we could have been in the Caribbean. we'll see.
Yeah, our 10th anniversary plans were all jacked up because of COVID. So we made the most of it this year, you know, but you know, we still managed to take time off and go away. We just aren't going, you know, overly far. That trip to Branson was really the farthest. It's one of the longest trips that we've ever taken with the kids. This trip, I want to say from where we are to where we're actually staying, it's only like a 4.5-hour drive. So that's not, after doing the 11-hour thing with Branson, 4.5 is going to be a breeze.
Oh, that's nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're not overdoing it this time as far as driving. It's like, hey, it's a nice afternoon drive, and we're there.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the Mexico trip, which is going to happen no matter what, because that's not a cruise. We're just going to resorts for that. So that's just flying
like
and coming back.
All-inclusive type thing.
Right, yeah. So that would be my first trip since the pandemic. I haven't been anywhere at all. So.
Oh, wow. Well, you need that. It's
good
for you.
Definitely. Definitely.
Get away.
Absolutely. All right. I think I'll let you go and keep getting ready for your trip and your vacation.
Yes, I'm excited. Excuse me.
So you'll be back.
August 1st. I'll be back in plenty of time for... I'm actually back on the July 31st, so we're gone 7 days. Straight week. I'll be back on a week from the day I'll be home. So
okay.
I will be home well in time for the weekend after that, which will be Hall of Infamy.
That's right.
The original, the OG.
Hall of Infamy.
Hall of Infamy. Yeah. And then, we can talk about it, but I like the idea next year of doing the catch-all of Infamy.
Because
the stuff that we can come up with.
The
stuff that we could come up with from just all the realm, you know, is insane.
It is. Now, we'd have to have the discussion as do you consider professional wrestling a sport? Because if we could include that.
Oh, my God. It's entertainment. It's not a sport.
Okay.
Right? I mean, it's like acting. It's basically... right? Isn't it? That's kind
athletic
of. I mean, I'm not taking away from the athleticism, but it's not a sport.
I just want clarification. Just you know,
okay.
I'm sure the wrestling fans that listen would be wondering.
But I am sure that knowing you, you will find a way to circumvent the rules because we do. That's one of the most fun things about this is that we find a way to circumvent our own rules. We have very few rules with the Hall of Infamy, right? But we still find ways.
We still find a way. We were not supposed to be inducting any Hall of Famers, and yet I just put Earl Weaver in tonight with his manager's corner.
But you put...
Uh-oh. Are you there?
Sorry. I was moving in my seat, and I clicked the mute button.
Ah.
So, everything sounded good tonight. I am on a brand-new computer.
Yeah, you sounded fine.
So everything sounds good, and then by the next time we have a show, I'll be on a different headset, so I'll be interested to see how that goes.
Okay.
I've decided to get out of the wired headset age and actually get a wireless headset because it wasn't that many shows ago that my son tried to walk away while we were on air with the headset still on and darn near ripped the computer off the desk. So now the computer is on the floor on a little tray with cast. So I can roll the computer around if I need to, cause it sits on carpet and nothing worse than putting a desktop computer on carpet. You can't really move it because it digs into the carpet. Plus, it's not good for static and stuff. So, yes, the days of my son trying to walk away and just destroy all the equipment while we're mid-show kind of was an eye-opener for me. Plus, I'm tired of all these wires.
Yeah.
There's just wires everywhere.
The wireless headphones at my job while I'm sitting there typing data entry is a godsend. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
With the Bluetooth and the noise canceling, and it's awesome.
Yeah, so I got
the Bluetooth
because this computer has Bluetooth. My old one didn't, so I was looking for like decent quality Bluetooth headset. It's not going to be a connection distance issue because I mean it's probably between me and the computer maybe 3 feet. So.
Right.
I'll be curious, so you'll have to let me know what you think of the sound quality on the next show.
Yep, definitely.
So, yeah, I'm good.
All right. So we're still trying to figure out the question of whether Giannis is a superstar, but while we're waiting for that answer.
Yeah, I need more data.
Take that for data. While we're figuring that out, we will congratulate the Milwaukee Bucks, the new NBA champions. I tell you, I never thought I would say Milwaukee Bucks NBA champions in my lifetime, but it took a superhuman effort to do it, and that's exactly what Giannis put forth. So congrats to him. He's a superstar. He's a all-timer and every other superlative you want to put on him. Meanwhile, he might have more in him before it's all said and done. Meanwhile, I hope everyone enjoyed the Major League Baseball Hall of Infamy induction show tonight with our new inductees. Hope everyone was entertained by that, and join us in a couple of weekends when we will have our NFL Hall of Infamy induction done by Jay. We are all looking forward to that, and that will put us into August, definitely, and it will sort of initiate our unofficial start of football season. The training camp is going, the Hall of Fame game and all that stuff. So it's almost that time. It goes by so quick. Football is almost back. So your unofficial start to it, our Football Hall of Infamy show, that's coming up in a couple of weekends. So definitely come back and join us for that. All right. He is Jay. I am Dre. This has been the off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast, Kings of Non Sequitur, featuring the MLB Hall of Infamy induction show. Again, hope everyone enjoyed it. Feedback, I told you about the email address, inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at IMLDDre. Jay is at IMLDJPG. All sorts of ways to get in contact with us. And again, come back in a couple of weeks. Football Hall of Infamy coming up. Everyone enjoy the rest of your evening, and we will see you in a couple of weeks.